Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, Canada, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little...
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much again, Audrey. You're always so flattering, and I do appreciate all the work to help you get on, help us get on the radio. And tonight it was difficult. I thought we were going to have to go back to some old technology of holding the phone up to speakers, but it all worked out. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network, and this is the Jumble Justice Radio Show, and I'm your host, Keith Haley. And Johnny Cash, he makes it every week, never misses a word of that song that includes 90-plus cities and states throughout the United States. And yes, we will do it, Emily. I promise we will do it. Some night we will sing together that song without lyrics. Of course, we'll have to come up with some way to prove to the listening audience that we're not using lyrics, but we'll work on that. I think I even know some memory tricks to teach you how to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, again, welcome. The purpose of our show is always to discuss news, events, and issues, and developments in the field of criminal justice, and boy, is it sometimes difficult, and we try to take a look at criminal justice practice and its professionals, closer look than anyone else does, and someone called, I don't know who it was, said that this is sort of like the NPR of criminal justice. Well, we'll accept that as a comment. I really like NPR and listen to it every morning and evening. This show is dedicated to our tireless criminal justice professionals, no matter what they work in, police, courts, corrections, juvenile justice, and some of those ancillary fields who protect us throughout the United States and around the world. The magic of Blog Talk Radio, I like to comment on that on every week. We're going to have an upgrade here in July to the host website, so I think it's going to be looking different if I'm reading things correctly than they're coming. But Alan Levy is the chief executive officer of Blog Talk Radio, and indeed the genius behind this medium. And we're now up to, I think they're pushing 1,800 shows or something like that, and the show growth has just been absolutely phenomenal. If you take a look at the show at the host site or the main site for Blog Talk Radio, you'll see the names of all kinds of shows and several dozen genres. And like I said, we're up over, or pretty close to 1,800 shows, I believe. And what I want people to always see, I don't know that anyone has taken me up on this, and frankly, I'm a little surprised. What is possible that any person, any interest group, from cigars to police motorcycle riding, You can have your own show that broadcasts live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and that cost is what? It's absolutely free. I'll say it again. I always do. Broadcast free, live on the internet, streaming audio worldwide, an unlimited number of listeners, and it doesn't cost one penny, to you at least. So you can broadcast at least 14 hours a week. So universities could, and colleges could have classes done that, or at least tied into classes. So it's a marvelous medium, and I think you're looking at the future as we see the iPhone and all sorts of other things coming out that allow you to receive streaming audio and video literally right in your pocket. So as I'm fond of saying, like on the back of Cheez-Its, the motto there that exists says, get your own box. You can get your own show. Tonight I have an apology to make for Detective Randy Stone. Randy was going to be on tonight, and he went on military duty last week to San Antonio, and he gave me a heads up here a couple of days ago that one of his friends was home lying on the couch taking medications for a real serious cold of some sort. And he was starting to get the same symptoms, and today he asked if it would be possible if I could do something different tonight, which I'm going to do. And he will be on next week on July 19th. So Detective Randy Stone from the Wichita Police Department's Forensic Computer Crime Investigation Unit will be on. And, of course, one of the things that Randy is going to talk about, he was a detective that worked on the BTK killer case. I guess I can release a little bit of a secret about that case without stealing his thunder, but he was in fact the detective that uncovered the initials BTK, which began to identify the gentleman who was a killer in this case. And as you recall, I think he's been charged and with the commission of killing 10 different women. So he will be on next week. I might also add that I'm going to be traveling next week, so I'm going to be down in Appalachia, down south, and somewhere down there in the mountains, and what I'm going to be doing is broadcasting remote from that location. The show should work just like it always does. We've done it from Seattle and I think one other location over the past year, so there should be no interruption there in show service. But next week, be sure to tune in and listen to Detective Randy Stone from the Wichita Police Department talk about a very esoteric area of criminal investigation, and that's forensic computer crime investigation. Mike, I'm sorry tonight. I saw that you brought in your book, Forensics for Dummies, by Dr. D.P. Lyle, M.D., and just bring that thing next week, and you'll be able to converse with Detective Randy Stone considering these cases that for this particular case and all the victims that he's worked in. So tonight we're going to be looking at some criminal justice news as usual. We're going to be doing some listener call-ins if people feel like doing that. And then what I thought we would do, if we have time for everything, is we take a look at a preview a little bit, the book Strange But Real by the six authors, Ron Edwards, Keith Haley, Amanda Moon Thomas, Shannon Scott, Tacey Tsumoto, and Sherry Warnock, and the book is now out, and I'll give you more information about that if you'd like to get it. But this is the book that looks at some rather odd issues in the field of criminal justice, and then allows you, the reader, if you're willing to purchase the book, it's very inexpensive, if you're willing to purchase a book off the internet at one of, I think, two different locations, I think you'll enjoy reading the book. These are not the ordinary kind of articles that you would be reading in a criminal justice type of book. I could say that it's popularized to some degree in terms of the way it's delivered, but I won't overdo that particular point. And then I thought if we have time, time will running short, I noticed that tomorrow night, this is a little bit of a fill-in, but hey, we could talk about CJ News forever, couldn't we? I thought we might listen to the detective show from the 1950s with probably one of the most famous detectives ever to hold the job. Who is that? Well, that would be Detective Joe Friday on Dragnet. Most people don't realize that Dragnet was a radio show before it was a television show, and some of you are young enough that you didn't even know that it was a television show. But it is a movie, and I noticed that TV Land is showing the movie tomorrow night, Dragnet, and we can get a leg up on them and maybe run some of that show tonight. They're very interesting. They were 30-minute episodes, and just like they always said on the TV show, these were always real cases. So very interesting detective show. What you do tonight is you listen on your computer with your Windows Media Player, or you can call in by phone. And when you call in by phone, you can hear the whole show. You can talk to me as the host and talk with as many as four other people. So that would be interesting if you would choose to call in tonight. Audrey, I do. Will never again miss a blonde joke. And you have one tonight. It's about playing the lottery. And you know I never do that. But one of the gentlemen that I went to high school with a very long time ago, when the lottery was out maybe 2 or 3 years, he won $7 million. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that, but a really nice fella. And the whole joke about this all was that his brother, twin brother, identical twin, he was part of the joke also. The one guy won $7 million, and his brother looked just like him, so they could play that dual role, each people thinking that each one of them had $7 million when only one actually did. But I like this joke, Audrey, so we'll see what this one sounds like here tonight and see what the folks have to think about that.
There was a blonde woman named Cindy that was in deep financial problems. So she got on her knees and prayed, "Dear God, please let me win the lottery. I really need your help, or I'll lose my car, the house, and everything else." She doesn't win. The next day she prays, "God, I really, really need your help. I'll lose my car, the house, and everything else." Once again, she doesn't win. The next day she says the same prayer. Then God speaks to her and says, "Cindy, work with me here. You have to buy a ticket first."
All right, I like that one. Yes, you do have to buy a ticket. And you know, I don't even actually know how you do that. There's so many options to play our lottery here in Ohio, and I think some other states it's even more complicated than that. And I don't even know if every state has a lottery. I doubt that they do. But anyway, tonight, if you'd like to call in and comment on some of the news that we'll be talking about, I'm going to release some news tonight. I think we've identified something here that needs to be taken care of, and I'll comment on that in just a moment. But you call in on the number 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. I wanted to mention something before we get started that I found just absolutely fascinating. I read the article in the New York Times this morning, but on Wednesday at some time, Google started something new on their map feature, and I don't know if you've looked at Google Maps today or yesterday, but they now have something called Maplets. And what Google has actually done, what they're saying is they're now bringing the web, the World Wide Web, to maps. They have now added 100 different type of applications to the Google Map feature. One of those is a panoramic view. It's Panoramia, I think is the name of the site. Anyway, you just click on Maplets, and then you can choose these different applications. It goes to several pages of them. You just click on the little icon, and then that feature will show up on your map. But this one that does the panoramic pictures is just absolutely fascinating. If you live in Cleveland, Ohio, or Wichita Falls, Texas, you can click. You can go to that particular city or that location, and of course, you know that you can move your map around with your mouse on the web page, but it will fill up with little blue circles. And when you click on each one of these blue circles, it actually gives you actual pictures. I don't mean from the air, like satellite pictures, Google Earth, but these are actual pictures of different scenic and business and all kinds of areas there. And, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So if you could go up Interstate 75 in Ohio or across Route 40, Interstate 40 in the United States, as you go along with your mouse, these pictures keep appearing, these little dots, and you can actually take a trip, a visual trip, on any route that you want in the United States. I've already looked down in Appalachia, some of the places I'm going, and it's just fascinating. I can put myself up on top of the Blue Ridge Mountains or whatever. One of the features of one of the 100 applications is the crime trends and crime rates. So you can actually put that feature on, and then you go by various cities, it actually will raise up the crime reports for that particular area. It will list real estate. You can look at, you can travel up and down the road and see all the different houses that are for sale. So I don't know. What more could we do with the World Wide Web? If anybody's going to discover something, it's going to be Google. And I've not had a chance to go through all of the applications, but there's about 100 of them, I suspect, if I know Google, that they will keep adding to these particular features. But take a look at Google Maps and click on the little button for Maplets, and I think you'll be astounding. For research students in university, there must be, unlimited applications of this particular feature. It's the kind of thing that you would have had to pay substantial money for to buy software packages to do this kind of thing in the past. All right, let's start off a little bit of news tonight, and I know, Emily, you like this one. You've traveled to Romania, and I have many times, but we have a case here in Timișoara, Romania, which I've been to several times, actually numerous times, and we have a case here where the prosecutors have not been able to find God. We're talking real here. Romanian convicts' legal action against God has failed because the prosecutors say they can't find God's home address. Now, believe it or not, this case has been going on for about 2 years, but Pavel Mircea from Timișoara, it's over in the western part of the country, almost on the Hungarian border. He's serving a 20-year sentence for murder. He launched a legal action against God 2 years ago. In his legal claim, he stated, God and I closed a contract when I was baptized, and God did not respect his part of the deal. He was supposed to protect me from all evils, and instead he gave me to Satan, who encouraged me to kill. And he demanded financial compensation for all the money he had spent on candles and church services, which he claims did not help him either. But the prosecutors in Timișoara have decided to drop the case after 2 years, if you can believe this. And the spokesman for the court said, we could not find God's address. He has no home address, so we can't actually do the case. How about that for an unusual thing? One of the controversial areas that comes up, I don't think I mentioned this last week, is that people just rave about this, usually against the idea, but putting advertisements on police patrol cars. And kind of an interesting idea, isn't it? Well, Toledo is actually doing that. They've solicited, maybe I did mention this last week, they've sent out 1,000 letters to various area businesses, and what they're trying to do is see who would be interested in placing advertisements on their police cars on the back quarter panels on each side. I'm sure they would set it up so it's rather unobtrusive, but that's a way to pay for police cars if you can't afford them. And apparently Toledo needs a lot of them. Their cars are old, and at least some of their union officials are saying that these things are in fact dangerous. At least some of these patrol cars, and we don't want officers riding around in cars that aren't safe. Immigration continues to be an issue, even though it seems like it's a sleeper in Congress right now, but you're seeing governors sign bills that employers or restrict employers from hiring illegal immigrants, and I'm going to be trying to do some of those kind of interviews in the next within the next 2 weeks as I travel, stop in and talk to some sheriffs that in the South and city administrators and county administrators where these laws have been passed that forbid either renting or hiring, renting to illegal immigrants or hiring illegal immigrants. But the latest to sign something like that was the governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano, and they have one of the toughest bills in the nation now. Senator Lieberman is always an interesting guy to follow, certainly doesn't follow the mainstream, seems like a person who follows his heart. He's now the chairman of the Senate on Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. and I'll lead this into some other articles I have, but he wants more wide use made of surveillance cameras across the country. He says the Brits have got something smart going on in England, and it was part of what I believe that will make us capable of quickly apprehending suspects in terrorist type of cases. I think personally I'd rather have cameras prevent terrorism cases, but perhaps we can't do that, and there's not a lot of real evidence that it does that in terms of crime either. And I'll mention that in just a moment in another article. But I think what we're starting to uncover here, and I'll comment on this a little more in depth in just a second, is that, you know, you remember the missile gap. We now have a situation in the world, in the United States is going on right now, where we're developing what I would call a surveillance camera gap. There are cities that actually are feeling deprived now because they can't get surveillance cameras as quickly and record the number that other cities have. Cicero, Illinois here is installing some surveillance cameras near schools. You have a pad and pencil here to write this down, and you figure out the math if you have to. Cicero police are installing a dozen video surveillance cameras around neighborhood schools after getting a $500,000 federal grant. $500,000 for 12 cameras. And they give the location where these cameras are going to be. The grant came from the School Safe Passage Program with help from the Cook County Commissioner Mario Marino. Chicago and several other municipalities have installed video cameras. That's an understatement. Chicago and New York are in a dead heat race to see who can have the most per capita. These cameras will also have smart features, and they get smarter the more we talk. And our book, Strange But Real, has articles about some of the most sophisticated ones. The British, of course, now are deploying lip reading cameras, if you can believe that. So you have to watch what you say, even if you're just speaking under your breath. In Great Britain. But anyway, these will track gunshots, and they will also allow the cameras to be read, monitored within a patrol car. So that's Cicero, Illinois. I don't know that that's a crime capital. I have to check their stats on the new Google Map feature. But it's sort of interesting, isn't it? Now, the British police, they did use these cameras, of course, to make some captures here relative to these terrorism cases in Great Britain and Glasgow, Scotland, of course. New York now, they plan to outfit hundreds of Manhattan buses with cameras. Then they want to add 3,000 motion sensors to subways and commuter rail facilities. And the French President Nicolas Sarkozy, Sarkozy is how he pronounces it, I believe, says he's considering a plan to install more cameras on public transit also. So as these cities around the world, the major cities particularly, report their accumulation of cameras and their total head count, it seems like there's a surveillance camera gap developing. Britain now, they say, has 4 million closed circuit security cameras. And the average Brit, of course, you've heard it many times, they get photographed like 300 times per day. So it's going to be interesting. It worries a few people. There is actually a agency in France that monitors privacy and personal protection data, and they're worried that we're going to have a society of surveillance just like Great Britain. Well, I can imagine. I did notice here in the same article that Sweden, last month, a court rejected the city of Malmo's plan to place 58 cameras in the downtown area, saying that it was too intrusive. And actually, I've not actually seen that anywhere in any article around the world. I think maybe in China once, of all places, there was something where people were resisting this and the government was at least listening to the idea. But China is just going, just based on the numbers in China alone, they're buying more of these things than anybody around. In Madrid, Spain, cameras recorded the bombings in 2004 that killed 191 people. That's a travesty for sure, and injured more than 1,800. But the city is required to seek court approval to install 31 cameras to fight prostitution. I'm going to jump ahead here a minute and take a look at, have other articles here that talk about this gap. But there's one area in Great Britain. There's a road with more than 100 cameras. and the cameras have been there for quite some time. And would you believe that these cameras this area is plagued by crime? A crime-ridden street in North London has been branded the most spied-upon road in Great Britain. It's watched over by more than 100 closed-circuit cameras, according to the Daily Telegraph. In one 650-yard section of Holloway Road that runs from Archway to Highbury Corner, there are 29 cameras mounted on shops and lampposts, a church, and a courtroom. There are 102 CCTV cameras monitoring crime on the 2 Mile Road, as well as further 7 checking for speeding cars and vehicles straying into bus lanes. Can you believe this? Unbelievable. Civil liberties groups are alarmed by the number of cameras. I wonder when they got alarmed. And they're worried about the state watching people to that degree. There's an organization over there called Watching Them, Watching Us. It's an anti-camera group, and politicians like cameras for what reason? So they can say that they're doing something. But he says, just like you see birds perched on scarecrows, the hoodies and the dealers come back once the novelty is worn off. Having so many cameras in one place actually makes police investigations harder. Do you ever think about that? I always said that. We've got all these cameras. Who's watching them, and how can we monitor all of that business? And that happens in retail security, too. They take zillions of footage or minutes of surveillance tape, but don't have time often to look at those things. Recently, police disclosed that there are 430 offenses committed over 6 months on Holloway Road, including 29 serious assaults, 15 robberies, and 32 burglaries. So in terms of deterring crime, that many cameras in that little area simply has not done it. I think that's going to be the record of most places around the United States. Now, the other side of that is it does give you evidence to look at in terms of, conducting and following up on an investigation. And it has been successful in allowing people to be brought to justice. So it's worth it from that standpoint for sure. But the cost of these things, I just can't believe. Cicero, that few cameras for $500,000, that just is astounding. Well, let me engage in just a little bit of crass commercialism for tonight, if you don't mind. And what we'll do is talk about this new book that just came out, Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice. And that has 6 authors, and this was a class that I was the instructor for here almost a year ago now. And what they did is decided that they wanted to go forward with a class assignment, and we talked about the idea that let's look at some things in criminal justice that are, in fact, strange. So if you go to the site lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com, and type in strange but real, or type in my name or Ron Edwards' name, but look for that book, and it will pop up, and they'll actually let you examine the table of contents in that book. You can actually turn some pages. And the book is selling, I think, for $7.80, if you can believe that. It's an interesting cover. You'll see there it's a road covered by surveillance cameras at night with interesting glowing features on the front cover. So I think you'll enjoy the cover as well as the content of the book. And here's some of the things that are actually covered in the book. It has 17 chapters, and the topics are, should police officers who undergo a sex change be allowed to maintain their employment? We had some of the authors on way back in the fall, just 3, I think, to talk about their particular segment of the book. And the woman that wrote that was Amanda Moon Thomas, and she worked at the Ohio... I think 130 women actually had their children with them in prison. There's one here that I wrote, should police officers be allowed to get naked in order to arrest prostitutes? And that really was a takeoff of something the Houston police was doing, where the courts and the vice squad determined that in order to arrest these prostitutes for soliciting, that the cops actually had to get naked themselves. And I think that's all the farther they're going to go, at least I hope. Shannon Scott wrote the article, Chapter 3, Should Law Enforcement Agencies Have Talking Surveillance Cameras? And Britain leads the way on that, but we're already getting them, I think, in New York City now, and perhaps Chicago has some of these. And this is the issue of cameras telling you what to do. And when I was on that panel on surveillance in society, in fact, I chaired it here about 3 years ago at the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences meeting, we had one of the Brits there that was highly involved in this this area. And these camera monitors, sometimes it's done automatically. They'll see you do something like dump trash, and then a voice will come out, either live or a recorded message, and what it will do is tell you to pick up your trash or get off your bicycle and walk your bicycle. So this is the kind of world we're probably moving toward. Like it or not, there's some things you can't turn back, and on technology, it doesn't seem like we could do that probably even if we wanted to. Sherry Warnock, she wrote the chapter on sanctioning torture in criminal investigations. Now, she's not talking about your average burglar. She's talking about serious cases where a child's life may be in danger, buried alive or something like that, or a terrorism case where a bomb's set to go off and you have a few people in custody where a little twist in the arm or whatever. She goes and defines many of these categories of torture, really well-researched. She finds out what's going on in it, so that's good. Then the other one is has to do with the CSI effect, which is already happening, well-researched by Stacy Simoto. And her article has to do with, should CSI enthusiasts be allowed to serve on juries? And what they've done is caused a little bit of a turmoil in some places in the United States, because when they serve on juries, they expect the police to be as good as they are, or the criminalists, or whatever they're called, forensic experts, on the TV shows, the CSI TV shows. They expect them to be that efficient, that effective. And, of course, I think there's a little bit of exaggeration, or maybe a lot, on that television show in terms of what forensic people are able to do. Ron Edwards, who was assistant director of the State Department of Rehabilitation and Correction here in Ohio, he wrote the article, Should Lawmakers Introduce Harsher Sanctions for Convicted Sex Offenders? And it looks like there's no end to that. I mean, who could be fond of a sex offender? That's for sure, and particularly when their victims are children. It's a serious issue. But Ron goes over a lot of the different things that are being done. He talks about characteristics of some of these inmates, and we've done a whole show on sex offenders here relative to restrictions on them about 3 months ago. And it is a very serious subject, and it just looks like we're passing more and more legislation. Stacy Simoto comes back in chapter 2, talks about ethnicity being considered in jury selection. And that's kind of issue. We balance now by race and a number of different things, but should we include ethnicity as America continues to become more diverse? And it's an interesting question. How many different features do we try to balance, and can we still do that without using technology to help us figure out these kinds of things? And Haley comes back in Chapter 8 and talks about worn-out subject. I think the battle's over there. 46, 47 states have right to carry laws, but I look at the issue of citizens and their right to carry firearms. Ron Edwards had a very interesting article in here. You'll really enjoy this one. And he poses the issue of whether or not taxpayers should pay for the sex change of inmates. And I don't think we have anything near a trend here, of course, but there are X number of folks in prisons now who are going through gender change or desire that they want to, and should that be the responsibility of the state corrections facility, the state of Ohio, state of Michigan, state of whatever taxpayers, should they in fact have to be paying for inmate sex change? It raises an interesting question. I do know that Canada does this, or at least they did, because I've actually heard a woman speak on that particular topic. And she was in jail in California, or in prison in California, and desired to do this, and California wouldn't do anything. And what she did, she went to Canada, she got arrested, got into the system, and Canada took her through the whole process. Should there be nursery programs in female prisons? That's another interesting topic. Should we have something like that? And I told you that Amanda Moon Thomas, she actually, I think she was a unit supervisor over the area, that this nursery program in Ohio's women's prison, actually the host for this prison nursery program. And it's a controversial idea. You stop and think about it. How many babies is it going to take to be hurt once in some type of inmate scheme? I'm sure these women love their children. But they actually have nannies. I don't know if you knew that. But they can't care for their child, of course, 24 hours a day. So other inmates actually get carefully selected to serve as nannies. And to my knowledge, and I think to Amanda's, that we've had no situation where something has happened where somebody's gotten in trouble over that. But, you know, inmates come up with various type of schemes, and it would certainly be a tragedy if a child got caught up in one of those schemes and ended up harmed. Ron Edwards comes back with another prison story. Of course, he's an expert on prisons. He's been in charge of numerous ones and been a warden, of course. And he approaches the issue of college education paid for by taxpayers. Of course, Pell Grants stopped in the 1990s. I forget the exact year, 97, 98, perhaps 1999. But inmates used to be able to go to college and have their tuition fully paid. And that was stopped. In fact, I collected an article out of the Chronicle Higher Ed when I lived in Texas when this happened. So it must have been prior to 1997, maybe 1996. And it said that Ohio was going to continue to pay for college education. And I don't know what the exact specification is in the state of Ohio. Somebody's listening perhaps might. But what happens is that in Ohio, I think you can take so many courses, but you can't get your degree paid for, but perhaps you can study right up to something close to getting your full degree. And, you know, one of the issues that Ron raises, and everyone does, would you rather have your inmate in a college class in prison or out in the yard somewhere planning some type of plot against the administration or another inmate? I know those aren't mutually exclusive, but it seems like a college education, in fact, could work. And I've known inmates and parolees that have gone back to college. Sometimes it's tough for them. Of course, not sometimes, it always is, to break that habit of the life of crime for a number of reasons. And I think I mentioned that we had a program when I worked at the University of Cincinnati where for about 4 years we had 25 ex-offenders who were fresh out of prison. And they were designated to serve in a halfway house in the Cincinnati area. And then they would come to class dressed like, you know, the normal student, and they were students in our class, but they were very informative to have in the classroom. When you talk about a prison issue, I mean, they could describe it. And some of my fondest memories and people I still have contact with are a few of those ex-offenders that really made good. They turned their life around, and not only was prison rehabilitation good for them, it worked, but the college education was real good. And one of them ended up at last count, he was an assistant city manager in the state of Kentucky, and he went on and got a graduate degree. Another one works in a social service unit in Cincinnati, and he actually robbed the bank that I could look out of my office window and see on the street there in Cincinnati. That's what got him sent to prison. Sad thing about that, he was an Air Force veteran when he came to it. So should we pay for college education for inmates, or at least have a payback program where they can get their education, but later, I'm in favor of that. A lot of people aren't, as they try to draw down on inmates and make prison a little tougher. I think what's wrong with prison, this was this editorial comment, and you didn't ask for it. Did you, Audrey? No, you didn't. What's wrong with it, people are kind of confused about the purpose. It seems like it's multi-purpose, and I suppose that's all right, but I think that sometimes confuses inmates. If the prison were punishment prison, or it were, maybe we could punish first and rehab second, but there's a clear distinction between the two, when we can't have people conning others and, you know, going to doing programs instead of doing punishment and not meaning a thing to them. They just sort of sit through and know the responses better than some of the people that are conducting the therapy or the counseling. So that's an interesting one. Here's another one that Stacy Simoto comes back with, chapter 12 in the book. She's talking about the execution of child rapists. And I haven't looked at the law on that, but I know Texas was considering on a second offense of raping a child that would be a death penalty offense in that state. And, of course, Texas leads the nation in executions. I always like to point out that Texas got started, several years later. They didn't start executing to 1982 because they were cleaning up a lot of appeals cases even after the 1976 Gregg versus Georgia court decision. So some states started earlier than Texas, but Texas caught up rapidly. So that's an interesting issue. Should we be executing child rapists? In fact, if we have a death penalty, some people would say, who could be a better candidate than that? There's one here that Sherry Warnock wrote that I really like, and you think about the Amish school case and Pennsylvania and these school intrusions and Columbine and that type of business. And the case at Virginia Tech is certainly an interesting one that would apply. But should people be taught to fight back against armed intruders? In this particular article that Sherry Warnock has, she's talking about children actually being taught to fight back as opposed to crawling under a desk and surviving in that particular situation. So I think I might have one of the authors on the line here, so I'm going to give a call here. Somebody's calling in. Let's see what's going on. Hello, who's online here tonight?
Keith Haley, this is Rick Geyer from Fremont, Ohio.
Rick, how are you doing?
Oh, very good. Great.
You were calling, I think, and talked to Detective Randy Stone about the BTK killer. Perhaps you were interested in that, and if you caught the show early, Randy is sick.
Okay.
Indeed is sick, and
well,
he will...
The topic you have going on is very interesting to me.
Okay.
I'm just, as you know, I'm 102% hardcore conservative.
Yes,
so
I think...
I'm all in favor of the death penalty. But the thing about, you were talking about whether or not the taxpayer should have to pay for someone to have a sex change, just astounds me. I just can't believe that we're plugging our money into that. And as I'm waiting here for to listen to your report there, I'm just thinking about all the maybe you can give us some input on even I think jails are air conditioned these days, and aren't they?
Most are, yes.
Yeah, most are, and it just astounds me that we put more emphasis on child rapists and murderers, and I know there are other criminals there, too, that are not quite as severe as those, but we put more emphasis on making certain that the jails are air-conditioned, yet our schools sit in college classrooms whereby people pay thousands and thousands of dollars to come to college classrooms that I know or dormitories that aren't even air-conditioned. And,
well,
go ahead.
All states treat prisoners quite that well. In Texas, all the prisons I've been in were not air-conditioned.
Okay.
But many of them are.
Yeah.
And you know what's behind that, Rick?
Is it because the heat and the humidity and the sweating causes more anger?
It has to do with control things. Even these programs and all this entertainment and all this business, if you talk to the security staff, you won't get this view 100%. But if you talk to them, they're going to say that this all has to do with control, inmate control.
Yeah. So could the same policy be afforded to our school systems? I mean, I know we don't run our schools usually in the summer because that's the old time where the farming kids used to go out and farm. But primarily it's we continue on with that because it gets so hot in the summer and our schools cannot afford to ask for the taxpayers to pay for air conditioning.
Yeah. And, I'm an old-timer, of course, but I never saw any air conditioning.
No.
Ever.
you see what I'm saying? I mean, we treat our... I know I understand what you're saying, but, I mean, we treat our prisoners better than we do our children.
And, depending where you are in the United States, some prisons are much more amenable to... has the amenities than others.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't want to do my prison time in Texas where you get up at 3:30. I think I'd rather do it in Ohio where you get up a couple hours later, and then I'm not sure always that you have to be up at that time. But there are other places you could go. Minnesota is a very pleasant place to go for prison. And worldwide, as you look at prison conditions, you know, one of our faculty members probably has a pretty good lead on that because I think he's writing about that in his dissertation. But you know, Sweden, there's no better place.
Mm.
I mean, you've got a cubicle, you've got your internet connection, you've got air conditioning, you've got just about whatever you want.
One person to a cell?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Nation,
but and the idea their view is, you know, it's kind of like Minnesota and Wisconsin. There, it's a, you know, it's a socialist type of philosophy that we want to be kind. Our prisoners don't need to be hated; they need to be loved.
Yeah, kind of like with the terrorists, Al Qaeda. If we would just be nice to them, maybe they won't bother us.
Yeah, isn't that odd? Yeah. We look at recidivism rates for terrorists and prisoners, but if you look at recidivism rates for prisoners,
yeah,
you're going to see that, you know, you've heard me probably say that old word in philosophy, one-third you can't do a darn thing with. They're never going to change until they get too old to run from the cops.
Mm-hmm.
Another third, you can do programs and they respond to them and it fixes them, right? And then another third, it doesn't make anything difference what you do. They're going to change themselves for the better.
Yeah.
Pretty much is how it turns out. I mean, when you look at stats over the years in different states and the federal prison system, it comes out 40, 50, you know, over half the, I don't know if you know, but over half the people in prison today in the United States have already been there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a new thing, so it must not be a bad place to go.
Not be too bad.
Yeah, it must not be too bad. And they talk about they can do their time, and of course you hear these crazy cases all every now and then where somebody wants to go back.
Yeah.
You know, was that Shawshank Redemption and
things?
They'd like to go back to prison. I think the worst part about it is you can't go home at night, right?
You can't go home at night, no.
But some of them, unless you go over the fence, but some of them actually enjoy that life. I mean, their friends are there. I mean, you know, get some new tattoos, get your tattoos taken off.
They can be somebody.
You know, be somebody. Hate to say it, but all the sex you want, I suppose, right?
Yeah, and they can, and basically, you know, just kind of like high school, you can excel there and be popular.
Yeah,
and they don't get that. You know, maybe they don't get that in their home. You know,
I always apologize for the statement when I say it to folks that work in corrections, but I don't think I've heard a new idea in corrections in 30 years.
Hmm.
I mean, really, a new idea?
Yeah.
All the new ideas are something, you know, old ideas come back, repackaged. It's things that we've done.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't remember it, but in the 1960s, we actually got to the point where we were talking about crime without punishment.
Hmm.
And we had books by that title, and one of those authors, he came back and changed his mind. He said he was wrong.
Yeah.
He looked at the data, and he says there are things that are clearly morally wrong in society, and we need to stand up to those and punish people who violate those norms and those values. But it's a tough issue, and people complaining now. As soon as we get the crime rate down, I think there's no doubt now that locking people up has a direct correlation effect on reducing crime. It took us 20 years to 30 years to get people to accept that fact. As soon as the prisons get filled, guess what the next thing they talk about?
What's that?
Letting them out.
Oh, yeah.
You have too many people in prison.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And my issue would be, well, maybe put some more in and see how low the crime rate could get.
Yeah. So, but what's their reasoning for taxpayers paying for their sex change?
That's part of the idea of getting them to feel normal, accepted, to be themselves, and then, in fact, they can live their lives. This malady, feature has caused them, to go off base.
Yeah.
That this will straighten them out. It'd be interesting to see what the number of cases are like this, but that'd be interesting. And you know, the one of the other articles that Amanda wrote in this book was about the Cincinnati sergeant. I'd love to get her on the radio show. But he was the guy that was the Marine sergeant for 8 years. You can read about it in the book. He was a Marine sergeant for 8 years and then came on Cincinnati Police Department. I forget how many years he had on there, and he decided to get a sex change.
Hmm. Do you suppose it has anything to do with the administrators in the prisons thinking that that if especially if the prisoner is a male and wants to go to a female, that if we you know, we reduce the amount of testosterone, that they will become more tame?
Well, I don't know, but one of the conclusions, well, one of the facts in Ron's article is Ohio has decided if you're in that condition when you enter the prison system, you go to the reception center and they watch you and do medical, all that business. And then what happens is Ohio is only obligated to maintain your status.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever point you are in this 8-10-step process, I don't know all the steps, I know some of them, but whatever stuff, Ohio only feels that its obligation is to maintain you at that status. And in some ways, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Because you're halfway across, you know, who knows what that involves, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're halfway across the trip from being one sex and going to the next one.
Why is it that you think that the general public believes that somebody who's a child predator or a murderer or something that goes to prison for life, we need to feel sorry for them and rehabilitate them as opposed to going to the death penalty when we have the victims, the family, the mother, the father, the victims of this, you know, possible child that had been abducted or whatever? Why do we feel more sorry for? I can't understand the thinking of the public not to have some concern for the child or the victim.
I think some do, but sometimes that victim's forgotten. That's a very important thing. I'm always concerned about that. But, you know, I had a story tonight about an execution that I didn't talk about in the news. We go through the nth detail about these prisoners being executed and what they ate and what their concerns were and what they said and how many people were there and all that business. And you don't hear a darn thing. I know it's history, but you don't hear the story about, 18 years ago what they did to someone else.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind. It's just like 9-1-1 with the World Trade Center. 3,000 and so many people died, but yet people, especially, a certain group of people will just act as if it didn't even happen.
Right, and I don't think that we can be reminded about that particular event enough, do you?
No, and isn't it surprising we don't see it anymore?
You really don't.
You don't see it. You might hear 911, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, that could be an emergency number. 911 is you know, but to see it on television again, when was the last time we've seen it?
Yeah, and you think of I think there's even some, I don't know, would you call it political correctness on that, where we don't want to show, and I think that's one of the concerns with talking about victims.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll talk about this inmate and always once at execution time, you know, what he ate and whether he had 2 Burger Kings or BK fish or whatever, but we won't hear about what they did. And some of these things are horrible things.
Yeah, they're horrible. And, you know, it's just like, if we give them an injection, oh, my goodness, if they had to suffer, it didn't take it right away or something, we're all up in arms about, we want to sue the government and everything else because this person had to suffer for 5 minutes.
Sounds like you know about that Ohio case where the guy had 86 minutes.
Yeah.
And they stuck him 19 times. He was a intravenous drug user.
Yeah.
And they were in trouble, and he actually raised his head once and said, it don't work.
Oh, he was preparing for it.
Yeah.
Well, it was a good idea on his part.
In Texas, too, they'll help him find the vein. They'll say, look, I think you try right here.
Maybe he could. Why don't you just give him the syringe?
Yeah, well, you know, we always look for the humane way to punish, and, it's people, you know, we think this lethal injection, of course, it's being challenged.
Mm-hmm.
It actually masks the pain.
Yeah.
Through horrendous pain, this first drug actually doesn't cover up the pain. But on the other hand, you go to a place like China, they just executed their, what was that guy? He was their environmental director or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Business criminals over there.
Mm-hmm.
he was perpetrating frauds and all sorts of things, and they use a shot in the head.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it always works?
What's that?
The shot in the head.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you mean it always works, yes. But
and,
I think what you have over here, I think you're really hitting on the target right there when you say it's socialism, and our country is being infiltrated by socialists, whereby we just want to feel sorry for these criminals, and you know, just Al Qaeda. I know your last subject last week was Al Qaeda, and I believe it was, and we just want to feel sorry for all these people. It just astounds me.
Yeah, and I think you know, I think few people can fully explain what's going on relative to this war against terrorism.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, and not to get grotesque, but I mean, as you noted, the story that went around of what the and not to get off your subject, but the Al Qaeda, what they were doing to the family member's boy.
Oh my!
And yet those subjects aren't.
No,
you never hear of them.
Yeah.
You never hear of them.
That's the one where they were roasting the children.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Stealing
and then
children.
feeding them.
Right. I don't know.
You go ahead and finish it, because my wife don't want to hear.
You don't negotiate about that, do you? I mean,
You go ahead. If you want to, you can tell your listeners what that story is about, if they don't know what we're talking about.
Well, it's a case where terrorism, in order to get other young bombers and that type of thing, they were intimidating family members. They would kidnap their children, invite the family out for dinner, and then serve the children up for them as a roast with like an apple or some piece of fruit in their mouth.
Yeah.
Serve them up for food. I mean, I don't know how much, you know, that almost makes a, I want to be careful about this, and, you know, nothing was worse than the Nazi regime, of course, but that's pretty close to being a Nazi, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and that's why I don't understand why people here in the United States aren't all up in arms about it, and it's primarily because the news media doesn't announce it. It's always shoved underneath the rug.
Let me ask you something else here relative to one of the articles in the book. Our chapter 14 has to do, should states actually create a separate female sexual predator act? You know, we have case after, I mean, it's legions of cases now of where women have, you know, perpetrated sex crimes against their students. They've struck up some type of relationship, you know, with young boys.
Mm-hmm.
They're 42 or 39 and the kid's 13 or...
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing the passes that they get in court on this type of thing. Whereas if you reverse that situation and had the male,
mm-hmm.
39 or 40, and the kid 13, horrible,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they pay the full brunt of it and sometimes even more. But is it time where we actually introduce an act? I guess we get all kinds of resistance because it would be gender-based, but if we can't get these women brought to brought to justice, then it seems like something needs to be done. And Sherry did a really fine job of discussing that issue in this camera. Or in this case. Let me ask you this other one, because I'm curious about this before we run out of time. Do you think if where you live in your city, your community, let's suppose you were all of a sudden saturated with these surveillance cameras, do you think you ought to have any say about what's done with those cameras?
Absolutely.
What do you think your input ought to be, for example, in downtown Fremont? You live in Fremont, right?
Yeah, downtown Fremont. Well, number one, do they have them in bathrooms?
Well, not public cameras that I know of.
Uh-huh.
Not true. Some are in bathrooms, like in train stations and things like that, but not actually in stalls. But and then parks, you know, you have them featured state parks and that type of thing. They're on... Well, you know, the type of activity that goes on in outdoor restrooms sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I know a guy that wrote his thesis on that once. What a thesis topic. How could you stay with that more than... right? But it was very interesting what he found out. But anyway, you know, what kind of, you know, should they be able to set that camera up and shoot in your house 24 hours a day? And you know who's paying for that now. I mean, there are poor people all over the United States and their communities that are high crime, quote-unquote, and these politicians are telling them, okay, well, we'll put all these surveillance cameras here as opposed to more cops.
Yeah.
And what we'll do is we'll reduce your crime that way. And you saw from the story tonight, if you heard, in England. It didn't work on that street.
No.
That had 102 cameras and a horrendous crime rate. But there are people that actually, and you know, most people say, well, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, what makes the difference? I hate that answer.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm a lover of liberty, and I don't think the government's business, because when the government takes this step, you know, I've worked in government.
Yeah.
What do they do? Then they go a little bit farther and a little bit farther.
Well, I'll just give you a scenario. Okay, let's just give you a scenario of an innocent bystander who believes in the right to, you know, open hand on the behind of a child, their own child, spanking. And it's legal in Ohio. Yet most parents believe that they shouldn't do it out in public simply because of the socialists that will try to accuse them of, because what is the definition of abuse? Okay? And so if you, this innocent bystander gets caught on camera spanking their child, what's to say that a socialist couldn't say that they were abusing their child?
Yeah, that's true. Well, the other chapters in this book, there's just a few more. That was one. The chapter 15 is about community having influence on deployment of surveillance cameras. Then Shannon did another really good one, and Los Angeles County is already using this. Should police agencies use airborne flying surveillance cameras? When you look out your window tonight, that hawk that went by,
yeah,
may not be an actual bird. It could be a police surveillance camera.
Well, then, would there be any offense to shoot it down?
Wouldn't you be the test case?
I guess it would be okay if it's hunting season.
It's going to happen, you know that.
Oh, yeah.
But the idea now, we don't have to deploy these things. We can just take them out of the trunk of our cruiser, assemble it, and turn it away. And, of course, the military is using these things that we don't even know about.
Mm-hmm.
They're flying around, but we continue to get this more militarism of the police, which I'm against. Can I say something real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to SWAT show, and I want to do it quick. I had never seen the television show SWAT.
Okay.
I watched. Have you ever seen Dallas SWAT?
No, Dallas SWAT?
Please take time to watch the Dallas. There's a Dallas SWAT. There's a couple other cities, but I've never seen it. I could not believe what I saw on television. 20 or 22 guys and women going to go serve a warrant on like one drug dealer.
Mm-hmm.
They come out, they ride on the side of these vans.
I've kind of seen that.
They bail out. They rip the house to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about homewreckers.
Yeah, and all they have to do is serve the warrant.
I'm just giving you a historical perspective. Back in the Ice Age, a couple of us went out and served it.
And usually sheriffs used to do it, didn't they?
Well, no, cops always serve warrants. You were given warrants for, there's always a warrants guy, but you were also given the warrants to carry for 3 or 4 days for people that lived on your beat.
Yeah.
So you might call for some backup or something like that. And it doesn't look like these guys were by identification or any. There's no indication that they were any more dangerous than anyone else.
Yeah.
But I was just astounded at it. I mean, I got a student doing a master's project right now, a research project on the militarization of the uniform.
Hmm.
So he's interviewing different people and showing them various ranges of pictures. You know, he selected uniforms from totally non-military, civilian-looking up to, you know, the military-looking uniforms that some of them are wearing now every day.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, watch Dallas SWAT, and you will just be astounded.
Well, Keith, maybe have you ever thought that maybe the reason they're going in and busting up those homes is maybe it's in the way for the superhighway that they're trying to put between Mexico and Canada, and they want to claim eminent domain.
Connection there with politicians, what do we know? Hi, thank you very much for calling in tonight, Rick. I always enjoy speaking with you. And you have such great, wish I could make you a permanent feature of the show for the news section, but you probably don't do that. But the last chapter in this book is one that I wrote, and I know it's a topic close to your heart. And it has to do with building a border security.
Oh, my.
Mexican border. Could we do an hour on that or not?
Yeah, are you going to do that next week? Or no, are you going to go off 2 weeks or so? Or
Well, in next week we're actually going to do Detective Randy Stone. So
okay.
Please talk to him. He's an interesting guy, and plus he's in the Forensic Computer Crime Investigation section.
Okay.
Which is a real specialty within police work. That's an area that you can't drop just anybody in, you know.
Yeah, well, let's if you can get that show in about the border, just a kind of a teaser for your listeners. I just heard something, a rumor, whereby they're trying to. It sounds as if the I'm not going to say who, but I just said it sounds as if they're trying to allow more and more to come across the border, so that it becomes such a bigger problem. This is what they think is going to work. Becomes such a bigger problem that we Americans would turn over and say, okay, go ahead and give them amnesty. So that's just a teaser for the next show whenever you have that.
I heard that a couple of years ago when I was there.
Yeah.
That the philosophy would that same outcome would happen.
Boy, the voters really came out in droves, didn't they, and stopped that immigration bill, didn't they?
That's the most astounding thing that I saw, where only 13% of people supported that. On the other hand, the most amazing thing is that our politicians didn't get it, did they?
No.
I mean, they simply didn't get it. So.
No.
What a thing.
What I think what you're going to see, and I know you got to get off the show here, but I think what you're going to see, and mark my words, this is my prediction, those folks that voted in favor of that immigration bill, cloture, you will see them not get reelected in the next election. I'm going to watch them very carefully to see if they were, to see if it had an effect.
Well, I think voters need to be reminded, don't you?
Yeah, for example, like Voinovich, I think Voinovich will be done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just my take on it.
Well, he could cry.
Be careful now, your surveillance cameras now and audio, they'll probably have you off the air.
Well, thank you very much, Rick. And I certainly enjoy our conversation always, and we'll be talking with you later.
Okay, watch out for the fairness doctrine.
I certainly will.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, folks, we missed Dragnet, but this was fun to talk about this particular book. And again, if you want to look at that book, go to lulu.com and type in Strange But Real, and you'll be able to get that book. And it ships out. There are all different kind of ways you can ship, just like Amazon. I think within several weeks it's going to be on Amazon.com, too. But it's very interesting reading, and these authors just did a tremendous job. I'm so proud of them, and I know they're proud of each other's work. So, folks, we're going to go ahead and sign off tonight. And, Audrey, I see the signal. We're running a little late, so we'll be talking with you next week from somewhere down in Appalachia.
Thank you.